This is Life Elsewhere, created and hosted by Norman B.
Hello there. Welcome to Life Elsewhere. I'm Norman B. Coming up, a conversation about a very important book on a topic we just have to talk about, QAnon. The book is authored by Mia Bloom and Sophia Muskalenko. The title, Pastels and Pedophiles, Inside the Mind of QAnon. Now, I don't want you to miss one moment of my conversation with Mia Bloom, and we would certainly appreciate your feedback. So why don't you jot down my email address, normanb@lifeelsewhere.co, that's C-O. First, music I'd like you to hear. It's from Annie J out of Wellington, New Zealand. The title, Girl Who Cried Wolf. And Annie J says, every night in this country, over 167 women and children are too afraid to stay home because of family violence. Girl Who Cried Wolf is a pertinent, timely statement on the prevalence of assault. The song puts a fresh twist on the tale of a boy telling lies, instead focusing on the importance of acknowledging the truth. The song is both a warning and an optimistic invitation to confront any wolfish, predatory behavior. And Annie says she hopes it can contribute to some change in the world. All proceeds will be donated to Women's Refuge Gift a Safe Night campaign. Now, directly after the song, my conversation with Mia Bloom on pastels and pedophiles.
Coming home after school with a bruise on my knee. Mom said she'd kiss it better. We'll fight off the wolves together. She said when they're young they learn how to bite without teeth. So when they pack together, don't stick around or you'll get hurt. Cause I knew one of those would go rogue when I'm alone. Now that I'm older, I can see much clearer. When I'm deep in the forest, I know there's nothing to fear. Head and ignore the staring. All those lessons at school on how to stay safe. But why do the girls get lectured? Why can't the wolves do better? Now that I'm older, I can see much clearer. When I'm deep in the forest, I know. Cause now I've got a pack of. of my own.
This is Life Elsewhere, hosted by Norman B. Let us know what you think of our show. Send your comments to info@lifeelsewhere.co. That's C-O.
The title of the book is Pastels and Pedophiles. The authors, Mia Bloom and Sophia Muskalenko. And I'm so delighted to have one of the authors with me who happens to be in Atlanta, Georgia right now, Mia Bloom. Mia, thank you so much for joining me and Life Elsewhere. I want to, before we go any further, and just let you know and my audience that I didn't enjoy your book one moment of reading it because I didn't want to read it. But I have to say you've done a fine job, and it is very, very readable, and I want you to know that.
But not enjoyable.
it's because of the subjects, but that you have written a book which is actually, it's a page-turner. It really is. So let's get into it. There was one word that came up for me, and I think it's on page 36, and it's a word which, again, I really didn't want to talk about, but I think it's really important we start here, because there's a word that you used, and I looked this up, and it doesn't exist, so I'm thinking that perhaps you guys made it up. Suicidality. So it's suicidality. It's
no, that actually is a real word.
Is it? Okay.
It's a real word that's used in psychology.
Ah,
and so
okay.
Basically, it's suicidal tendencies. And so you very often, because I work with a psychologist,
yeah,
and Sophia is not the very first psychologist I work with. I also work with a fantastic psychologist at Boston Children's Hospital, a child psychologist, because my last book was on children in ISIS. Sometimes you're talking about terminology and it sounds made up. And in fact, no, psychologists have their whole own language and a lot of terms that sometimes you sort of have to explain.
Yes, yes. Well, the reason I picked up on this word is because the subtitle of your book is Inside the Mind of QAnon. And it struck me as I read that word on page 36, and you're talking about the mind of QAnon, I'm thinking this is something. As the general public, we don't think of suicide. We associate with this peculiar, and I don't even know what to call it, movement. I don't know how we'll get into that in our conversation. QAnon, it is so fantastical that it's hard to believe that it even exists in this day and age. With all the information, the abundance of sources of information that we have, here is something called QAnon, which is beyond peculiar, beyond fantastical, it is truly just outrageously amazing. I'd like you to just give your overview of what QAnon is.
Well, QAnon is a baseless conspiracy theory that's based on many of these age-old anti-Catholic, anti-Jewish, anti-Semitic tropes. And what was so interesting about QAnon is, on the one hand, we've had conspiracy theories for 40, 50 years. We know that conspiracy theories exist. We've never seen one become this popular that it's bordering on being like a mass movement. Steve Hassan calls it a cult. Other people are wondering, is it a new religion? And so we were trying to get at where QAnon came from, because for the most part, QAnon's popularity was relatively flat up until the pandemic. It starts in October 2017, and then all of a sudden it is supercharged on steroids. According to the Wall Street Journal, we saw a 600% increase in the amount of people who were talking about it online and posting. And so, in fact, it is very possibly because of the plethora of information that you talk about that has accelerated this movement from platform to platform, and now from the United States, to be a global phenomenon. And it's so bad for you because the suicidality is that the vast majority of people who believe in this QAnon conspiracy theory It's okay, it's bad. We know it's bad for the institutions of democracy. It's bad for the country, but it's also bad for the people that believe it, because it is so upsetting and it causes such mental anguish that they're damaged individuals, not just because they're drawn to QAnon, but consuming the QAnon content does further damage.
Which is why I mentioned suicide, which is because it just ties in together, unfortunately. In putting this book together, you touch on so many different areas, and you touch on some of the reportage that has gone on, particularly the two documentaries, the Vice documentary and the HBO documentary. I've watched both, and I highly advise my listeners, if you haven't seen both, to watch both. Both come up with a different conclusion. And I'd like to just touch on that just for a moment. For my listeners, we're talking Tamir Bloom. The book is called Pastels and Pedophiles Inside the Mind of QAnon. So these two movies, as I mentioned, have two different conclusions. Let's talk about the Vice one very briefly.
Yeah. So what happened was the question of who is Q was very relevant for many people. Up until around 2020, people trying to figure out, was it a high-level insider that was getting information directly from Donald Trump? Or could it be, you know, one of the many people claiming that they were connected to QAnon because of the Cicada 3301 puzzles? And what we were able to determine, so I'm watching the Vice News, it's 6 hours of documentary, and HBO is another 6 hours of documentary. But one of the things that became clear is that there was so much effort in tracking down who QAnon was, with the assumption that if QAnon was unmasked, it would undermine the people who believed in it, when in fact, most people now who believe in QAnon don't actually care who the original Q was. And so I use this line from The Princess Bride. Clint Watts, who's an expert on terrorism and I've known for many years, used this quote, you know, as Wesley is explaining, who is the dread pirate Roberts? And, you know, Buttercup says to him, but you can't be the pirate because he's existed far beyond when you disappeared. And he says, it's the name that matters. And so I think that on the one hand, whoever Q was, likely changes over time based on the style of writing and also, you know, capitalization or poor grammar or also the words that were used. But ultimately now, when you ask most people, like when Donny O'Sullivan goes to a pro-Trump rally and he finds the people wearing QAnon shirts or I'm with Q, they don't actually care who Q is. Q is now bigger than the individual who started it.
Yes. Yes. There's another documentary that isn't about QAnon, but it ties in. And I'm curious to know, one, whether you've seen it, and two, whether you think it ties in. And that's the BBC documentary titled Can't Get You Out of My Head. Have you seen that one?
I don't think I have. I might have seen some clips because there yes. were some clips attached to the articles I was reading.
Yes.
So it's very possible. As you can imagine, there was so much, even though this has only existed since October 2017, there was a lot to catch up on. And part of what I was trying to do was there was no one repository yet to explain to people
right.
what's going on. And yes. so it's very possible I missed it, but I'm going to put it on my, I'm going to
okay.
put it in my queue.
Immediately. All right. I just want to compliment you, Amir and Sophia, for all the diligent work that you did in putting this book together. You researched clearly and you've done your homework and your groundwork on this one. I am a peculiar person in that I like books with notes. I like all the references that books have, and you have lots and lots of references and notes in here. You also have, which I really want to push and tell my listeners about, at the end of the book, you have questions, which, me being somebody that likes to question everything, I thought this was terrific. It's not a cheat sheet for somebody like me who's doing an interview with you, but I was just fascinated by this, that you sort of came up with a whole list of questions that, you know, people, not necessarily interviewers like me, but the general public are going to be saying, okay, but what about, and how about, and you do that
this way. Exactly.
And what, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Because, okay, so both Sophia and I are academics,
Yeah.
And he's written, you know, Sophia's written 4 books on terrorism and radicalization. And I have also various books on suicide terrorism and women in terrorism, children in terrorism. There's a theme. But we thought to ourselves, we want this book to be for like everyone, because we think that many people now have a cousin or an aunt or an in-law who believes in QAnon, and they are shunning them, or they're trying to help them get out of this crazy conspiracy theory. And so we thought, what are some of the questions if people just want to have a quick answer? Because what they can do, and this is what we recommend, we don't say, oh, you're an idiot. Don't shun the person. Don't shame the person. Don't insult the person. But start asking them questions. And when you get to the point where they can no longer answer, then you have the answers.
Yes.
And so, in fact, I have to give Sophia the credit. She is the one that came up with this idea to have FAQs, because we often see, you know, frequently asked questions, but because it had a Q in it, we thought it was, you know, appropriate for the book.
Yes, yes. You just touched on something which I want to get to, and that is the chapter in your book about women, because I think when we think of QAnon, and particularly when we think of January the 6th, because this is all tied together, we think of the men, the raging men, and the violence, and the image of the shaman person with the bear chest and the Viking horns, and it's a the peculiar, ridiculous but powerful image at the same time. Yet, I don't think I'm alone in thinking. I'm not so sure that I remembered seeing a lot of women, but you point out in your book how involved women were, not just in January the 6th, but also in QAnon, and the prevalence of women's interests and fascination and involvement. And you tell some stories, you relate some important stories in your book about the women involved in QAnon. Can you talk about that now for us?
It was one of the things that really was challenging, because both of us have looked at radicalization, and we know that women are the unsung heroes in many terrorist movements. People are very surprised, because we have an image of women, you know, having second-class status, like especially when we talked about jihadi terrorism. And you would think, oh, the women, they're in veils, or they're covered up completely in a niqab. They are powerless and they are without influence. But in fact, we had traced the role of women in all of these movements. And what people fail to realize is, if you want either a movement, a terrorist group, or a religion to continue to, you know, have longevity, you need the women. Because the women guarantee they bring in the husbands, but you also guarantee this next generation with the children. So, for example, if you want to go back to religions, some of the very first converts to early Christianity were women, and they were the ones that promoted it, as well as slaves. And so, again, when you look at how something becomes a movement, you have to realize the role of women. The other thing is that the very first person to die at the Capitol, Ashley Babbitt, was a woman. And so you have lots of women, the very first person now to, and she was just, I guess the judge found her guilty, although they didn't give her a very large sentence yesterday.
Right.
This woman from Indiana. So that there are lots of women involved, but with the beginning of QAnon, women made sure that, you know, whether it was YouTube influencers like Tracy Diaz, or it was Republican candidates like Marjorie Taylor Greene, women have been at the forefront of ensuring that QAnon is disseminated. And once, how did women get pulled in? When it went to Facebook and Instagram, especially Instagram, that's where you really caught women. What was the message you caught women with? Save the children. And so it was last summer that we saw a massive uptick in the role of women, because like ISIS, this is how they got women. Did you want to help the children? Of course we want to help the children. And this is the way in which you pull, and you got women, you're invoking their maternal instinct by saying, if you don't become a keyboard warrior for QAnon, your fault that the children are being ravaged, or they're being exploited, or worse, they're being killed, and you know, someone is drinking their blood.
Yes, we'll get to the drinking the blood thing in just a moment. You know, I can't help it, as you and I are talking here, Mia, every so often there's certain things come up, and both of us are sort of kind of smiling. But one of the things, and I wanted to mention this to you, there's absolutely nothing funny and nothing worth smiling about in this book. And that's what I meant. And that's what I wanted to go back about how not, how, I mean, I yes, I loved reading the book, but I hated the fact that I loved reading the book because there's nothing funny about it at all. There's so many tangents we can go off on. And I just want to talk about something that you mentioned just a couple of moments ago, and that is religion. And you talked about, I think the word Christianity came up. And it struck me, and I don't want to take too long on this, but it struck me that as not being a Christian and as not being raised as a Christian, it always struck me as being such a peculiar religion because it's based on some fanciful ideas that just, for me, I question. And in a way, you mentioned about QAnon being a religion. It's not that dissimilar in some respects, is it?
I mean, there are quite a few similarities, and I'm going to say something that's very controversial.
Yes.
So I'm expecting the hate mail.
Yes.
Every single religion has fantastic myths.
Yes.
So in Islam, there's an allegation that when Muhammad, the prophet, peace be upon him, was born, the angels washed his heart with snow in the Arabian desert. Or Moses parting the Red Sea. Was it low tide? Like, in other words, every single religion comes with it.
Yes.
These fantastical elements. So that, on the one hand, I agree, there are elements of Christianity that I find a little bit surprising and head scratching. But I think that's probably true of every single faith. All
yes.
The monotheistic faiths
yes.
have something fantastical, which is, again, a source of inspiration. And so for some people, these are allegories. These are, it's not intended to be taken, word for word directly. But for other people, they genuinely believe it. So, the virgin birth. What happens with QAnon is it definitely has skewed itself to having a very large movement and support among evangelicals. And I explain in the book that part of this has to do with when you talk to evangelicals, the idea that there is good and evil in the world, it resonates. The idea that Satan is operating and doing horrible things and acting through others, that resonates, as well as the fact that when you talk to evangelicals about how they discovered Christ and put Christ in their life, this idea of an awakening resonates. And I think that this is why we see so many evangelical Christians who believe in the most outrageous elements of QAnon. But it's not just the evangelicals, because we're also seeing it among Catholics, despite its very anti-Catholic elements. And this was very surprising, Orthodox Jews. There are QAnon channels on the encrypted platforms in Hebrew. I just did an analysis of them, and I'm sitting there going, QAnon is an anti-Semitic based, ideology.
Yes.
How could it possibly appeal to Jewish people? And so they tweak it slightly. But what they do is QAnon is different in different countries. And depending on who is reading it, they find something that they can appreciate,
yes.
that they can relate to.
Yes. There is a quote from an editor at the Financial Times that you give us in the book. And she says, Q does not want you to come to your own conclusions, which I found really remarkable. It's like, if you believe in QAnon, you don't need to be thinking about anything other than what QAnon tells you.
And this is part of the trick that they play on people, because everyone who believes in QAnon is like, oh, I did my own research. No, you did your own research with clues that were preceded to lead you to a particular conclusion. And so the example we gave is like a lawyer who's leading the witness, or a psychology who is, convincing someone that it's their idea as they are suggestive and they are giving you the conclusions. That joke that Joan Rivers used to make, I've started therapy, and I've started false repressed memory therapy. I'll get something on you yet. this was one of my favorite jokes of hers. But what happens is that the people who believe in QAnon think that they've done their research. And so how does QAnon delude intelligent, well-intentioned people. So I did a study of this Save the Children. After the book was finished, I wanted to delve more into it. And what QAnon would do on its channels, its platform, is that they would litter in with this fantastical, horrible allegations of 8 million children going missing and the government doing nothing. And of course, as QAnon portrays them, they're all white children. When we know from trafficking, most children trafficked are not white.
Are not white, yeah. Yes.
They will pepper in a few of actual FBI missing children. And so I did this triangulation and I would look up the name of the person. And of course they were missing, but they've already been found. And they were missing in 2016 and they've since been found. So the idea is that if someone is using, you know, QAnon and they're trying to do this research and they Google something and they find it's true, they may then believe that all of it is true.
Yes.
I checked. That name exists.
My guest is Mia Bloom. The book is called Pastels and Pedophiles, Inside the Mind of QAnon. We're going to take a quick station identification break. When we come back, I'd like to get into the title and just have you explain to my listeners the pastels part and the pedophile part right after this.
Thank you for listening to Life Elsewhere, hosted by Norman B. To learn more about our program, our guest, and the music we feature, go to lifeelsewhere.co. That's C-O.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Mia Bloom. Along with Sophia Muskalenko, she has written a must-read. It's a page-turner. Unfortunately, it's everything in it is true. Pastels and Pedophiles is the title. Inside the Mind of QAnon. The title is very provocative, Mia, and you and Sophia, obviously, you're very aware of that. Talk to me about the title.
So originally we wanted to just write about the women, in part because women are so often forgotten that when any story is written, a story of any movement, a story of any political group, or because we were very familiar with terrorism, we always forget about the women, and the women are so crucial. So the pastel part came from Adrienne LaFrance of The Atlantic had written an article about pastel Q. She had been citing a researcher, a PhD student at Concordia named Marc-André Argentino. But of course, as I told you earlier, the idea of pastel for me has a long history of admiring pastels and understanding that while pastels appeal to women, they can also appeal to men. The pedophile part is because they are so focused. Everyone in QAnon is so focused on the pedophilia. Calling someone a pedophile is the worst thing you can say about someone. And so saying that during the campaign, they were disseminating these untruths about Hunter Biden, about Joe Biden, and that, you know, you call someone a pedophile. The problem, of course, is pedophilia is a real problem. And child protection is really a challenge. And there are children who are trafficked. And so because there is that tiny grain of truth where we do have a problem, we have a problem of child marriage, we have a problem of child labor, we have a problem of children being exploited sexually. All of these things do exist. And so what QAnon has done is they've just taken something that really is genuinely a problem and activates a woman's immediate maternal instinct to protect the children. And then they've added all of this, you know, fantastical fabrication and in many ways plagiarized material to it. And as I had written in my last book, when ISIS used to recruit women and young girls to go and move to Iraq and Syria, the question that they would ask the women was, did you want to help the children? That's how you get to women, because we all, no one's going to say, I don't care about children.
Yes. Yeah. I want to get back. We started off earlier talking about the two documentaries. We talked about the Vice one, and I want to get back and talk about the HBO one. But before we get to that, very quickly, you're talking about pedophilia, and I may be completely wrong about this, but in my understanding, pedophilia has been with us since time began. But there hasn't been a surge in pedophilia in the 20th century or the last 20 years. It's kind of remained a constant. There are pedophiles, we know that. But the interest in pedophilia from people that are not pedophilias has come and gone. And as you said, QAnon took this and ran with it and used it. But there hasn't been, this is a very quick question, but there hasn't been an increase in pedophilia. It's not something which has happened.
There's been an increase in reporting. Think of it this way.
Yes.
We know about a long history of pedophilia in the Catholic Church. But in the 1950s, if a child had said to his mom, Father O'Leary is, fiddling with me.
Yes.
Generally, what happened was the child would have been punished. How dare you speak that way about Father O'Neill?
Of course, yes.
And so I think that we have also, because of the Me Too movement, we have now a society that is much more willing to believe the victims and to take a position, a very strong and angry position, that these things have been going on among powerful people like Weinstein or Woody Allen. I mean, the fact is that there are enough kernels of truth in what QAnon says so that an educated, intelligent woman is going to say, oh yeah, that Michael Jackson documentary was, Finding Neverland, that was terrible. And oh my God, 60 women coming forward for Bill Cosby. And so that there's enough of the abuse that's going on with young girls and young boys that it starts to look like, yes, there is a secret cabal of powerful people who are never punished for their crimes. Right. And this is intended to cause outrage. I used to teach at Penn State. I know full well now the world in which we live in, the reaction when it comes out that someone who was once admired was actually a pedophile, it has this break, the psychological break, that people are like, how can we trust authority anymore if these are the ones who are taking advantage of our children?
Yes, yes, very well explained. I appreciate that, Mia. The HBO documentary. Let's just touch on that briefly. This one comes to a conclusion about who QAnon was. Could you explain that?
So let me start by saying that I had a few moments of watching the HBO documentary that are critical. And I think that Colin did a fantastic job. But Sophia and I sort of came to the same conclusion without all the business class flights to the Philippines. In other words, there were things in that documentary. I'll give you one particular example that I had a negative reaction to. He was talking about Branton Tarrant in the Christchurch mass shooter.
Yes,
who went
right
into the mosque. And he had the GoPro camera on his hat, whatever he was wearing. And the documentary had a good 4 or 5 minutes, not of the actual violence. And for me, that violated the Christchurch Accord. Why are we giving Branton Tarrant a platform? So
yes,
there were parts of Colin Hendricks's HBO documentary that I took great issue with. Other people took great issue with the fact that he's normalized some of these people who are not necessarily, good people. So he
right
gave him a platform. So part of it is that it took many years to do this documentary, and it's very likely that at the outset, unmasking who QAnon might have been a way to undermine the movement. But by the time the documentary came out, it had grown so big that
yes,
who QAnon is no longer going to have an effect on whether people believe it or not. Because even if, let's say, some people are talking now about this tour that Donald Trump is going on, and
yes,
some QAnoners are turning against, why is Trump going on tour? He should be saving the children. I think that the underlying premise of QAnon, that there is this cabal of blood-drinking Democrats and elites that include the British royal family, the Windsors, and included, recently I saw the Dutch royal family, which I was like, how'd the Dutch get involved? But I think that this idea that powerful people are doing horrible things and they are never paying the price, that is going to continue to be part of what mobilizes people, regardless of whether QAnon is Ron Watkins or not. Because again, this whole idea of getting Ron Watkins to admit that he's Q, it doesn't have the same oomph factor in 2021.
Yes.
But it did in 2018.
Yes. Once again, Mia, you've explained that incredibly well, and you've brought up some areas that I questioned the whole documentary with as well. It seemed to me that it kind of celebrated some of the unsavory characters, and there's a lot of them in the documentary. It kind of reminded me of the Tiger King documentary. You know, it had that similar kind of feel, the editing of, it kept giving you this idea of what's going to happen next, but you kind of know what's going to happen next, yet you're sort of lustfully sort of being a voyeur in some respects. There was something a little uneasy about the whole thing, and I agree with you. I'm sure that the idea at the beginning was to really do a genuinely honest reportage, but I think it comes across as being rather stilted, and some of the characters in it seemed to me like they were thoroughly enjoying the presence of the camera and were playing up.
They love the free publicity. I mean, I think many of these people are, you know, well, I don't want to say the word, but publicity, the word that one uses after. People want the platform. And so what have I learned in 3 decades of studying terrorism? The last thing you want to do is help the terrorists disseminate their message. You don't want to be a spokesperson or a willing tool, or, you know, the way, or a fool, you know, the way that we talk about the fact that Putin has manipulated so much of the Republican Party that they are useful idiots. We ourselves, if we're looking at a phenomenon, we should not be the useful idiot to help disseminate the message of the phenomenon. We should be challenging the message, and we shouldn't put someone like Frederick Brennan as like the hero of the story.
Right. Yes, exactly. And talking about heroes of the story, there is a name that for the last 5 years, I've done a number of programs on, a lot of programs questioning the motives, the mental states, everything apart from glorifying Mr. Trump. Mr. Trump comes up in your book. And I'm just curious to know, Mia, the connection between QAnon and Trump. I'm just going to throw this out, and then I'm going to ask you to give me your take. But it does seem to me that Mr. Trump has no affiliation with anybody unless it is to his advantage to make money. There is no moral compass there whatsoever. Just like to get your take on QAnon equals versus whatever Trump.
For QAnon, the people who believe in QAnon, Trump is the only one who can save the children. Yes. According to their folklore, the generals got together and they asked Trump to run for office, even though, you know, he didn't want to. And it reminded me of that story of how, you know, how Moses gets his lisp, you know, that he doesn't want to be the spokesperson for God. Yes. So basically they call him Q+, that the generals got together. They say, you know, Donald Trump, you are the only one that can break this cabal that has existed for hundreds of years. And the cabal is a way of explaining all the horrible things that have happened. You know, 9/11 happened because of the cabal. And so what you end up having as part of QAnon ideology is it folds in and it encapsulates all these other conspiracy theories. And so it's kind of like one-stop shop, something for everyone. People that believe in conspiracy theories tend not to believe in just one. QAnon also has one about the British royal family. Apparently, you know, Princess Di had a daughter, but they sequestered her and they hid her away. We didn't put this in the book, but basically there is a Princess Diana lookalike. And there's this whole, you know, Diana was about to blow the lid off of the pedophilia that was going on in the palace. And that's why they had her killed. So that there's all this ideology that people with money and power are always up to doing evil things, except for Donald Trump, who is Q+, and he's there to save the children. As far as Donald Trump is concerned, it's very late. It would have been impossible post October 2018 when all these people were showing up at, starting in Tampa, where you are, and then moving from Florida. It's always Florida.
Florida
to the rest of the country, where people had shirts and they had signs and they had flags. Donald Trump knew there was something. And certainly if Donald Trump was, you know, too dim to figure it out, the people in his campaign, like Steve Bannon, certainly saw it.
Yes.
And then they started to say, you know what, let's use this to our advantage. And wow. So the Q proofs that they would talk about, where they would take a Q drop, which was, you know, on first 4chan, then 8chan, and 8chan became 8kun, and they would try to match it up with one of Donald Trump's tweets or something that he said. At some point, they said, you know, if you don't believe us, we challenge Donald Trump to use the term tip top. And no sooner than later, it was Easter, and Donald Trump appeared on the balcony of the White House along with the Easter Bunny, and he goes, we call him Tippy Top. And the QAnon crowd went wild. There's our proof. Donald Trump is acknowledging us. But the fact that Donald Trump refused to say anything against QAnon, not just, you know, during his presidency, but even during the debates, was a way of keeping them within the fold without acknowledging them. And so in many ways, QAnon were useful idiots for the Republican Party.
Yes. Can I quote you on that? Useful idiots.
I'm sure. And I started with the let's not insult QAnon. So we really did want to help most people get out.
Yeah.
But
yes,
the people who've been making money from QAnon, people like disgraced former General Michael Flynn.
Yes.
People like Sidney Powell and Lynn Wood. These people have been running a Ponzi scheme to get QAnon supporters. They sell QAnon merchandise on their websites. And because we had access to Parlay before it was taken down by Amazon web hosting services, we would see all of these QAnon posts with a link to General Michael Flynn's website to pay for his defense fund, his legal fund.
Yes.
So someone was making a few someones.
Yes.
I even talked about Jason Galinas, who is a former Citibank executive who created a platform, and he had 10 million visitors a month. People were making money off of this. And you have, on the one hand, well-intentioned individuals who are heartbroken at the thought that there are children that are being trafficked and abused. And I can relate to that. But someone was using them.
It's so funny, Mia, because I had written down here a note as you were speaking, who's making the money? So you've just answered that. That was terrific. You know, we're getting close to where we're going to be running out of time, unfortunately. But one question I often ask authors, particularly nonfiction authors, is whether they enjoyed writing their book and the research that they put into their book. I'm not going to answer this for you. But once again, I'm just going to say that Pastels and Pedophiles is a must read. It's a page turner. But it's not enjoyable because of the subjects in that respect. I'm putting that in parentheses. But I'm curious to know, with yourself and your co-author, Sophia, I'm just wondering how much, and I'm looking for choosing another word, but did you actually enjoy getting the information together? What was the satisfaction element for you in putting this book together?
It's a fair question, because it's a question I've been asked my whole career. My entire career, I've been writing about suicide terrorism and women in terrorism.
Yeah.
I've gone around the world interviewing people. Well, obviously, the failed bombers. Successful
yes.
bombers are very hard to interview.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, and the book that I wrote before, Pastels and Pedophiles, about children, was heartbreaking. What motivates many of us to study these horrible subjects is the hope, the shred of hope, that we might be helping people. You know, and I always thought, if I could help just a few people, it makes the horrible experience of going through this stuff worthwhile. And so, you know, I study horrible subjects, subjects that are nightmarish. But in the back of my head, I think to myself, well, maybe by me taking the lid off of it, I can help people. I can help expose what's going on. I can demotivate someone from running away and joining ISIS in Syria. I can let them know in Afghanistan or Pakistan, if you give your kid to the Taliban, that kid boy is going to be raped. Like, in other words, if I can help create, you know, we call there's this expression called heal the world. It's called tikkun olam. How do we heal the world? And I guess the English translation would be almost like pay it forward. If we can do good, if we can try and help others, and then others help others, then in the end, we have a better world in which we live. Yes. People are suffering because of QAnon. Families are being rent apart. People are shunning their own, you know, in-laws or cousins or even parents. And what we hope to do is give an individual the ballast to be able to say, I know you believe in QAnon. Let's talk about it because I need to get you out. And it's the same way that people would write about cults or write about fringe movements or the jihad. Help someone get out instead of, you know, saying, that's it, you're dead to me, because that's going to cause more harm. And separately, we also wanted to let people know that in the dark recesses, Russia and China were manipulating things. And so again, this is intended to do exactly what it's done: undermine the institutions of democracy, but also at the individual level, QAnon is bad for you. It's bad for you to believe in it. It's bad for you to consume, because I'm sitting on the platforms. I know what you're watching. I'm watching it too. And it is horrific. And so if you believe it's true, then of course you're going to want to stop the cabal. And I'm here to tell you, help children in a different way. So let's take your good instinct and let's channel it positively instead of into QAnon.
Mia, and in some respects, you've kind of answered my next question, and that is, what is the most important takeaway you would like readers to get from Pastels and Pedophiles?
I think, you know, there's lots of people who can write about QAnon. I know Will Somers writing a book, Mike Rothschild has a book. So the first part of the book, which is sort of the history of it and understanding it, is useful, but it's Sophia's psychological analysis that really makes this book unique. No matter how many QAnon books come out, Sophia is both a certified clinical and social psychologist. And so she is giving people the helpful hints and the tools that they need to help someone out. And so the most important takeaway from the book is, if someone in your family or in your friend, you know, network believes in QAnon, it is your responsibility to try and help them out, because you will be doing good to help them back into the light. They, you know, the way I would phrase it is, the pandemic has affected a lot of people's mental health in very, very negative ways. Yeah. Being online for hours at a time, we know from all the studies, is bad for you. And if you are consuming this horrible material, it is going to be bad for you and cause you stress and anxiety. If you can help someone out away from QAnon, you will be improving their life and you will be putting the family back together.
Yes. I have the feeling that you and I could go off on so many different tangents. We could talk about this for ages. You're a terrific conversationalist, and I've thoroughly enjoyed chatting with you. Pastels and Pedophiles, Inside the Mind of QAnon is the book. I guess I can't stress this enough, that it is a page turner, as I've said now a couple of times.
We try to end on a happy note, like how to help people.
So how to help people, yes.
We wanted to try to end on a positive.
It is a difficult story. It's but so well put together. Both of you have done a terrific job. I'm curious. This is a sort of a going off. This really is going off on a tangent. But I've always been fascinated by when there's two people putting a book together. How does that work? How, in your case, with you and Sophia, how does that work? Do you write different bits and then you sort of cut, then you go, okay, I like what you've, how does that work?
Well, it's a great question because I co-author ordinarily, you know, with my grad students. And so they send me their stuff and I have to rewrite it and fix it. And, you know, with Sophia, I had never encountered anyone with whom I have worked that had the same dedication and work ethic. And at no point did I feel like, you know, I gotta carry her, which has been, you know, in the past.
Yeah.
We have a collaboration. It's not always a 50-50. In this case, it absolutely was. So I catfished Sophia. I've known her for many years because she has a fantastic reputation as being the world's leading expert in the psychology of terrorism.
Yeah.
And so I had catfished her by called her and she said, oh, what's wrong? I said, you know, I have this great idea for a book and I can't do it alone. And I asked this person and that person and they turned me down and, you know, and I piqued her interest, you know, and I was like with my fishing line, very gently reeling her in. And she said, well, how much would you need the person to do? And I said, oh, I don't know, maybe one or two chapters. And she said, I can do one or two chapters. And I said, oh, really? Uh-huh. And so I did chapter one and two. She did chapter three and four. We did chapter five and six together. And so it really was a meeting of minds. We joke, we are two, you know, non-American originally. So we're two female immigrants, Yeke Ashkenazi Jewish women who have our entire lives had to be better, stronger, faster than the men.
Yes.
And basically my, you know, both of us were, and we're both like kind of short and petite. So it was a fantastic collaboration. I wish we had worked together sooner because we've known each other for years, not close. But this, now we are like two sisters, peas in a pod, and she is just so brilliant. And so, you know, with her, we wrote a proposal to the Department of Defense and they gave us $1 million to keep studying this. So it is now your tax dollars at work. We are moving ahead and we will continue to expose conspiracy theories and show people what there's really involved in order to help inoculate the population from believing misinformation and disinformation.
Excellent. Come back and join us again.
I would love to. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I really enjoyed talking to you. My guest, Mia Bloom, along with Sophia Muscalanco, has written a terrific book, Pastels and Pedophiles, Inside the Mind of QAnon. Mia, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's just been a pleasure. And I love your art. So I really. But for the people who are listening that don't get to see this, the art is fantastic. It's beautiful. And it's so nice to have, you know, in the background. It's very calming.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. The link to the books and music we feature on Life Elsewhere are always up at lifeelsewhere.co. I began the show with a powerful song from an artist out of New Zealand. Here then, more music from down under. It's a duo called Deuce out of Melbourne, Australia. Curtis Wakeling and Kaylee Hayden. Their self-titled LP has been on repeat play at Life Elsewhere Towers for the last few days, and I want to share a cut with you. Curtis and Kaylee say the collaboration enables them to further understand each other's stories and experiences. So to take us up to the closing credits, this is Deuce with Swim. Till next time, please be safe, be well, and always, it costs nothing. Be nice. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Life Elsewhere, created and hosted by Norman B. Life Elsewhere is written and produced by Norman B. Guest booking and additional research by Stephanie Lane. Behind the scenes assistance by James Van, Bruce Goodman, and Allison Klein. We love to hear what you think about Life Elsewhere. Send your questions, queries, and comments to info@lifeelsewhere.com. .co. That's C-O.